My name is Ruth Baldessera, and I'm a quality engineer at Siemens in Heaton in Newcastle. And I'm going to talk to you today about Sir Charles Algernon Parsons. Now, you might have heard of Parsons, or you might not have. Chances are your parents and your grandparents have heard of Parsons, because at one time, the company C.A. Parsons in Heaton employed over 12,000 people, and the factory has been there for 130 years. It now belongs to Siemens, and I work there, and I'm very, very proud to work there, because there's an awful lot of heritage goes with working at the factory. So, who was Charles Parsons? What do you know and what do you not know? I'm hoping that during this blog, you're going to find out some bits and pieces that you may not know. Anyway, Charles Parsons, first of all, let's think about his parents. Charles Parsons' father was the third Earl of Ross. Now, what does that mean? So he was called William Parsons, and he lived in a castle in Ireland called Birr Castle, which is right in the centre of Ireland. William Parsons, or the third Earl of Ross, as his title was, built an enormous telescope called the Leviathan in 1845. And at that time, that telescope was the biggest in the world, and it gave views of objects such as the Whirlpool Galaxy with a clarity that had never been seen before. Now, if you go to visit Birr Castle, it is actually open to the public, and you can actually see the telescope, which has been restored. Charles Parsons' mother was a lady called Mary. Mary Ross was a pioneering photographer, very unusual in those days, and she made photographs from waxed paper negatives. Unusually, she was also a talented blacksmith, and she made a lot of the ironwork that you can still see at the family home at Birr today. She also provided a lot of the metalwork for the big telescope. So very unusual in those days for a woman to be involved in that kind of work. But if you go to Birr, you can still see the evidence, and they have reconstructed her photographic darkroom. So Charles Parsons was born in 1854. He was the youngest of four brothers. He did have many more siblings, but sadly, none of them reached adulthood. In addition, something people may not realise, his father died when he was only 13 years old in 1867. So he was the youngest brother, and he lost his dad when he was just 12 or 13 years old. So quite a lot of tragedy, really, and quite difficult. I mean, you know, in some ways he was probably brought up by his big brothers. Anyway, just back to Birr Castle. Birr has extensive gardens with hundreds of rare trees. It has a science centre, a museum, a gift shop, and a cafe, and it's where the current Parsons family live today. Brendan Parsons, who lives there, is in fact the great-grand-nephew of Sir Charles Parsons, and as I say, it's open to the public, so you can go and visit. I'm lucky enough to have been there and sat in the kitchen, which was just a delight to think that Charles, as a little boy, was running around there. As a big fan of Charles Parsons, it was a thrill to walk in his footsteps. Interestingly, Charles and his brothers were actually schooled at home in Birr by tutors. Charles Parsons was actually born in London, but raised in Birr Castle. The family did have a home in London. Whether his mother was there on holiday at the time or what they were doing in London, I've no idea. But he was actually born in London and then raised in Ireland in Birr Castle. And it's said that the children got up at 7:30 a.m. every day to do 2 full hours of lab-based experiment work before undertaking other educational subjects. Part of the fun of living with his brothers and a father who was interested in science was that the third Earl had built a steam-powered car, And in 1869, when Charles was still a teenager, the boys decided to get it out and take it for a drive around Birr. A cousin of William Parsons, Mary Ward, was travelling in the car one day during such a test when, tragically, she was flung from it at speed and eventually died from her injuries. This was the first ever recorded fatality as a result of a car accident. Not something that Birr wants to be famous for, but it is something that is acknowledged. After that, there were no more cars built at Birr. But with Charles Parsons' genius, could Birr have been a world-leading centre for manufacturing cars? It's something I've often wondered about, but something that we will never, ever know. At the time of the accident, it was recorded in the newspapers as follows in 1869. On yesterday, the people of Parsons Town were much excited and grieved at a sad accident which occurred in the town. In the afternoon of yesterday, the Honourable Captain Ward, his wife, the Honourable Mrs. Ward, the Honourables Claire and Charles Parsons, and Mrs. Biggs, the tutor to the young gentleman, were on a steam carriage which has been built by Lord Ross. The vehicle had steam up and was going at an easy pace when, on turning the sharp corner at the church, unfortunately the Honourable Mrs. Ward was thrown from the seat and fearfully injured, causing her almost immediate death. The unfortunate lady was taken into the house of Dr. Woods, which is situated nearly opposite the scene of the unhappy occurrence. And as that gentleman was on the spot, everything that could be done was done, but it was impossible to save her life. So, there you go. The first fatal car accident was at Birr in Ireland. So, following being schooled at home, when Charles got into his late teens, he then attended Trinity College, Dublin, where he read mathematics. This would have been strange for him because he'd only been schooled at home. So, you know, it's written that he was very, very shy, which isn't surprising, really. Following Trinity College, Dublin, Charles then went on to attend Cambridge University, where he graduated in 1877 with a distinguished degree in mathematics. Following university, he came north to carry out an apprenticeship at Armstrong's Works in Elswick, near Castle-upon-Tyne. And many people have asked me, why did he come to Newcastle and why Armstrong's? Well, in those days, if you wanted to do engineering, that's what you had to do. Everybody who wanted to be an engineer had to carry out an apprenticeship, even though they already had a degree, and come to Armstrong Works, because there were no universities offering engineering degrees at that time. So he was getting on a bit, really, but he came to Armstrong's, which became Vickers Armstrong's, and then it became BAE Systems latterly, and now I think that factory is broken up into different units, but you can still see it. It's along the Scotswood Road in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. In 1883, Charles Parsons married Catherine Bethel from Rise Park near Hull. During that time, he had left Armstrong's and he was pursuing the early part of his career at a company called Kitson's in Leeds. After a couple of years, he left Kitson's and came to work back in the Gateshead area for Clark Chapman. And during that time as well, he was proposed for the Institute of Engineering by his brother, of course, because his father passed away, remember, when he was only 12 or 13 years old. So, fast forward. So what we know about Charles Parsons from, you know, various books and the internet, etc., is that in 1884, he developed the world's first steam turbine generator. It was the first machine type that could produce electricity on very large scales, sufficient to make it both plentiful and affordable for everyone. And that is the key point about it. By 1905, turbine generators had become accepted as the preferred method for producing electricity in large central power stations and subsequently were employed in all countries around the world. Turbine generators have been used to produce most of the world's electricity. In 1889, Charles Parsons had made his home in the Northeast, and he had set up C.A. Parsons in Heaton, the factory where I work now, which now belongs to Siemens, remember. And during his time there, he developed the turbine from 75 kilowatts to a big power station at Dunstan, which is no longer there now. But thousands of people have worked there over the 130 years that it's been there. And in short, he created a global industry and provided the means to make affordable electricity for everyone. And that is the key point about Charles Parsons. It's bringing electricity to everyone, not just the wealthy. So he had made his home in the Northeast. He established several major companies to develop and manufacture turbo generators. His companies employed many thousands of people, and he brought substantial prosperity to the region. In addition, many engineering and shipbuilding companies worldwide were granted licenses to build Parsons turbines and generators. So it truly was a global business, and he truly had created a global industry. We also have to talk about Turbinia. If you go to the Discovery Museum in Newcastle, you can see Turbinia, which was his experimental vessel. So Sir Charles developed steam turbines for ship propulsion, and these were adopted by most shipyards around the world for ships which needed high power output and or high speed. And he used Turbinia to demonstrate this. Turbinia's iconic moment came during Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee Naval Review in June 1897, where she was driven between the lines of the world's warships at speed. Parsons engines went on to power giant passenger liners such as RMS Mauritania, as well as many naval vessels such as HMS Dreadnought. For 70 years, marine steam turbines remained the dominant method of producing high power output for ships until the advent of the large diesel engine and the gas turbine. In addition, in 1896, only 2 years after the first application of the turbine to the driving of fans, Sir Charles undertook to construct a turbofan for the important duty of ventilating Claravale Pit of Wylam. He also made an exhaust steam turbine and a small compressor for the likes of Hazelrigg Colliery of the Burradon and Cox Lodge Coal Company. So there were many, many things that he was making and many applications. After Charles Parsons died, fast forwards a few decades, we now have the metro system in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. And you may or may not know that the fans made for the metro system to exhaust fumes, they were made by the factory at C.A. Parsons at Heaton. So the applications of his genius weren't just power stations and ships. It also touched the mines and railway companies as well, among other things. So where did Charles Parsons live? When he first married Catherine and came to the Northeast, they lived at Elveston Hall in Wrighton. And my understanding is that that building was rented by the Parsons. They didn't actually own it. It no longer exists. I think there's probably a new housing estate there now. But I think there are roads in that area that are called Elveston Road or whatever. So you could see where Elveston Hall was. And at Elveston Hall, he did have water. He had ponds. There was a lake. Wherever Charles Parsons lived, there was always a pond or a lake because he always wanted to carry out experiments. If you cast your mind back to Birr Castle, he was brought up in a framework of do experiments to prove things. So he would have model boats that he would float on ponds and lakes wherever he was living and test things out and then scale things up. After Elveston Hall, which was a little bit too far out, the family moved to Holland Hall in Wylam. Holland Hall is still there. It's now split into three different residential properties, but the actual building still remains. The gardens still remain, and Holland Hall overlooks the village of Wylam. Holland Hall eventually was given over by Charles Parsons as a military hospital during World War I. But the family remained there for a long time and did have many anecdotes about what went on at Holland Hall. There's a big lead tank in the attic at Holland Hall where Charles Parsons would store water so that he could feed the soldiers for the hospital and keep them supplied in water. But apparently he set up a gate at the entrance, and every time it opened there was a pump attached to it, and it would pump fresh water up into this lead tank. So all the time he was using his own practical abilities and his own engineering to adapt his home for the benefit of other people. Sadly, in World War I, Charles Parsons' son was killed, and it was his only son. And it's said that after that happened, he never went back to Holland Hall. By this time, the family had bought Ray Domain up in Kirk Welpington, another country property, and it was their country residence, really. It was there because there was Sweet Hope Lakes, which was a trout fishery. There was the grouse moors. There was lots and lots of open space where he could pursue country sports, which is what he liked to do. But after Algernon was killed, the family moved up to Ray and never came back to Holland Hall, although they did still own it. Ray Domain, the house at Ray Domain, was eventually demolished, but the actual estate that Charles Parsons owned is still there. And you may think ironically, or if that's the right word, there is a wind farm there now, which is absolutely wonderful. The fact that we're still generating electricity on land that belonged to the man who was the father of the turbine is just really, really great. The family also had townhouses in London and a townhouse in Jesmond. Anyway, when they retired, I mean, with all those houses, where are you going to live? But when they retired, the Parsons went on a series of cruises. And the interesting thing about that was every ship that they went on a cruise had a Parsons engine in it. And it's said that Charles Parsons spent more time in the engine room than he did in the cocktail lounge. And poor old Lady Catherine spent a lot of time sitting in the cocktail lounge by herself. Well, you can just imagine that, can't you? I mean, he's an engineer. He built the engine. Of course, he's going to be interested to see how it performs when they're out at sea. And in those days, it would take 3 or 4 weeks to get anywhere. So he would be having the time of his life. Sadly, though, he did pass away on one of these cruises in Jamaica in 1931. But there are memorials to Charles Parsons all over the world, and in the northeast at St Nicholas's Cathedral, on Blackett Street, you've got the outside of Fenix there, you've got the Parsons Polygon. There are buildings named after him, and hopefully this podcast will also be a lasting memorial to an almost forgotten man. Thank you for listening.